tell my inner child I'm sorry for everything you had to go through. It started as a child. I wish that I was stronger in situations that I had to go through. I'm trying to press it now.
Hey, you guys, it's your host, Intute Talks with Two. We are in Chicago for the first edition in Chicago, episode one. Today, I got a special guest, Deshante. How you doing today?
Hello, I'm good. How are you today?
I'm doing good. I'm excited. Are you excited?
I'm excited. I'm always excited to reach a different platform, a new city, and experience new people, so.
That's good. So, Deshante, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Me? The jack of all trades. So, I am a podcaster myself. I did What the Heel podcast with my two girlfriends, Izzy and Brittany. And then, as of recently, I just ventured off onto my own and started Seductively Said podcast. So, I like to label myself as like a podcaster, an entrepreneur. I'm a business girl too. I've done everything from desserts to sex to anything. So I'm savvy that way. Job wise, I'm more like I consider myself like a therapist, but I'm going to school for it. So I'm in an accelerated master's program now to get my license in clinical psychology. Because
okay,
I want to
okay.
own my own practice and, like, grow it from there. I just, I work with women. So I work with, like, sex workers, sex trafficked women. And then I work with women who've experienced domestic violence. So I just want to, like, expand on that and, like, do things my own way and have my own practice.
There's nothing wrong with having your own.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's who I am. I want to create, like, my own little wave of things because it's nothing better than having your own.
Yeah.
So, are you from Chicago?
Yeah.
Born and raised?
Yep.
What part?
I'm actually Northwest suburbs, so.
Northwest. So the good and the bad.
Yeah, so I'm more so like from the good side of Chicago. Bad in the sense of like violence way. So I didn't have to grow up with any of that. There was no shooting or gangs or anything I had to witness. I was born in Maywood, but I think that was just because that's where my mom was at the time. But otherwise, nope. Just I've always been next to Schaumburg.
Okay. So can you tell us a little bit about growing up in Chicago? Because, you know, we're based in Nashville, Tennessee, and we tend to hear a lot about Chicago, you know, but I think we only hear, you know, the bad part. Mm-hmm. So can you tell our listeners that may be from other places, like what it's like really growing up in Chicago?
I think Chicago is like a beautiful place. I think it gets a bad rep on the news.
Yeah.
I'm not really a news girl, so I know you guys probably came out here and was like, damn, am I going to get a shot? Like, you know, the point. But no, it's really not like that. I feel like, I always say it's like the two areas, more like South Side and West Side, that are a little like rough and are gang related and gun violence, stuff like that. And even with that, I think that if they change the way that they treat people, that maybe the outcome would be different. Because, like, even in the stores in the suburbs, like, our stuff's not locked up or chained up or whatever. But you go, like, somewhere out west or something like that, their deodorant's locked up. They're, like, the simple, right, your face changed. The simplest things that you think of are locked up. So it's like you're treating them like animals and criminals and putting this notation on them that they're like bad already, when give them a little space, a little freedom to be a normal human being and they wouldn't be so rough.
Right. So what was it like for, you know, you growing up, like your personal experiences growing up, like middle school, high school?
I think I was a pretty popular kid. So I didn't have any like bad experiences. I loved growing up. I still kind of have, like, the same friends. I've had the same friends for, like, 20 years plus. So I grew up in Elk Grove, so it was a pretty close-knit community. So it was, like, we could walk to each other's houses after school, and, like, everybody's parents knew each other, and, like, we all just hung out, and it was more, like, family and community, and it was great. I don't have any complaints growing up.
That's good.
Mm-hmm.
So, I want to get right in. So I know you're a domestic violence survivor.
Mm-hmm.
Can you share your personal journey and how it has shaped your approach to mental health?
How much time you got? For me, so I met my abuser in 2017. Mm-hmm. So like a typical abuser, he was not like violent or anything up front. It was more like I got wine and dined every day. So we were like going out to lunch every day, going out to dinners, mm-hmm. like nice dates, nice hotels, like the whole nine. So what was the next thing? I was more of like the girl, like I'm not going to shack up with somebody or live with somebody if I'm not married or at least on the road to being. So when he brought up like, oh, you should like move in and all this and that, I'm like, okay, well, if I have a ring on my finger and some form of commitment, mm-hmm. so like a true narcissist, that's what he did, like gave me a ring and like act like he was so committed and everything was going to be great. And so I still was like 1 foot in, 1 foot out. So like mm-hmm. I still had my own place, but then I was like slowly transitioning to live with him. But the second I let my place go, that man switched. When I tell you, it was like
a light switch,
like a light switch just clicked in his little psychotic brain. So the first thing I remember was he called me a bitch for the first time. And that shit was, I was like, who's that? Like, what are those? I was like, no, like, he couldn't have been, like, talking to me. So, like, this is how I'm thinking right. in my head. So, like, I remember I called my family friend at the time, and I told her, I'm like, abuser. I'll be nice, not spread a name. But called me a bitch. I'm like, this is so out of character. Like, maybe did I do something, blah, blah, blah. And then she was like, girl, like, you're on the road to a domestic violence relationship. Like, right. hop out now. And I'm just like, no, like, it can't be right. like that. She's like, no, they start with words, and then it escalates. And then so that's really what happened. It started with words, and then it escalated. And I remember I was pregnant with our son, and I think the first, like, crazy bit was he punched me in my mouth because I asked him for money to go see like my best friend, or she lived in Iowa at the time. And like, because I woke him up and disturbed his sleep, he punched me in the mouth when I was about, I had to be about like 3 months pregnant or so. Mm-hmm. And then, I don't know. I just remember like, just like crying so hard, because I've always been a hard worker. I've always been somebody who like held my own. So when I moved in with him, and then he was like, oh, you can stop working. Like, you'll have this amazing life. And like, he would keep money at the top of the dresser. Once he reeled me in, he stopped doing that and then treated me like I was like a child. So the abuse went on my entire pregnancy. It was bad. Anything from getting punched to slapped to hit to beaten to being like essentially like a sex slave to him. If so, even after he busted my lip, it was mm-hmm. okay, now you can come in here and suck me up, and next time watch how you speak to me when you ask me a question.
So how long was this relationship?
That was like 4 years of my life. So my advice to young ladies, do not waste your 20s with an idiot, and you are deserving of respect and love and honor, and there's a man out there that'll give that to you. So yeah, I wasted 4 years of my life, but I don't look at it like a waste now, because I use it right. to help other women. But yeah, I've had everything from dislocated knees to punched out doors, fucked up homes. Man would repeatedly punch TVs out, like back to back to back. And I just would be bruised up. I remember, like, even in the summer, I'd be so bruised up. I'm wearing hoodies in the summertime and 90-degree weather. I got a hoodie on because it was always, if I went outside and I told somebody what was going on, I wouldn't have a house. I wouldn't have a car. My kids would be, like, ruined. Like, you'll ruin our lives and blah, blah, blah.
So did you have kids prior to being with him
mm-hmm.
already? So how many kids did you have already?
I had one. I had a daughter, and I think that's my biggest regret, is that I had to put her through that
mm-hmm.
because I have a strong relationship and foundation with her dad. And he's amazing, like top notch, top tier guy, always provide and look out for. He's great. And so sometimes I think, like, why did I go that route? Like, her dad wasn't a saint in his early 20s, but, like, to chop it up, it was more like young, dumb, full of cum type thing. But, yeah, I had a great life before I met him.
So do you have kids with him?
Yeah, I have one son with him. And that's something else, like, with domestic violence. Like, once they can't use you, they'll use your child. Mm-hmm. And that's what he continues to do through this divorce. Like, we've been in divorce court for over 2 years.
So y'all was together for four years. And then, so that mean y'all got a divorce 2 years after?
We didn't even stay married a year before he had the first illegitimate child on me.
So he had a child on?
Three.
Oh, so he had three other kids on you?
Yeah. So the first one, I remember, like, we were, like, separated, but, like, we were separated and still, like, dealing with each other. So when we like, got back together after our little stint of separation, it was, like, we had the conversation. Did you do anything with somebody else? Did you? And it was, like, yeah, like, okay, whatever. Move on. So fast forward to, like, October of, because we got married in 2020. So you fast forward to October of 2020. This lady came out of nowhere saying, like, this baby is his, blah, blah, blah. So, like, at this time, he's out of the house. So I got the information from, like, a member of his family. And I remember because I was in Target, dropped to my knees, and I'm like, is this true or is this, like, a joke?
Right.
And when I saw the baby looked just like my son, but the lighter version. And I'm like,
and your son looks like him.
Yeah. So I'm like, you know, is that a picture of Bubby and somebody's playing with me? Like, the fuck is going on? And then confirmed it was true. I ended up watching the baby. He convinced me, like a true narcissist, to stay, that it was a one-time thing. I'm so sorry, blah, blah, blah. Like, open up communication lines with me and the mom. And then, yeah, that was the dumbest decision of my fucking life. I stayed. I would watch the baby, even on the weekend. So, mind you, I'm watching a baby that my husband had on me by another woman. So she's free to go out on the weekends, and I'm stuck in the house with a house full of kids. And I think I had great resentment back then that I never would talk about, because he would want me to treat that baby like my own, and I'm fine with that if I'm choosing to accept that. And he would want me to, like, skin to skin with the baby and, like, act like basically, like, the baby was mine, like I birthed it. And I went through all of that. And then,
so,
two more came after that.
So how did that situation affect your mental health?
Mental health wise, actually, when I was pregnant with our son, he convinced me to go to a IOP program. I don't know if you know what that
What's
is.
What's that?
Like an intensive outpatient program.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like you're going to therapy for like 4 to 6 hours or something like that a day. It's almost like partial hospitalization. Because what I honestly believed happened is that he drugged me. And like I feel like I lost my mind. And I think on top of that with the abuse and everything else. And I remember like one day I like just went to the hospital. I'm like, I think something's like wrong. And then he just coerced, like, yeah, sweetie, like, it's your mental health. It's something wrong with you, blah, blah, blah. Like, gaslighting, manipulative narcissist to the T. And then I ended up staying in that program, like, pretty much the whole stint of my pregnancy. He was my medical power of attorney. So this man was, like, feeding me all these psych meds and, like, doing all this shit to me. And I'm feeling, like, helpless. So mind you, the program has no idea I'm being abused. So I'm going to program. He would even, like, pop up at the program to make sure I was in there after he just beat my ass and then send me on my way after he just stole my keys and wouldn't let me leave until he okayed it. So I'm sitting in program just acting like I have this amazing life, and, like, he'd pop up with, like, breakfast and all these snacks and, like, oh, is my wife and my baby okay? Like,
Oh yeah, something was seriously wrong.
And it was so fake. That was like the fakest therapy of my life. He had me trying to fill out to go get Social Security for mental health reasons. And mind you, at this time I was in like nursing school. So like I'm smart enough to know these things. So he had my mind under so much control that like I'm using my knowledge that I got from school to essentially try to get disability for a mental health issue I never had.
Wow.
And then, I don't know, trigger warning for those of you with suicide issues, but like I ended up almost committing suicide because I think the level of abuse I was under was so bad that I had in my mind that not being alive would be better than being here. And so I remember like, I think I was in like a state of psychosis because like my meds had changed. He's like doubling them up so I can sleep all day and be a zombie. And then I ended up like just taking a whole bunch of pills. But as soon as I did it, I felt regret. And I called 911 and I was able to at least open the door. And then after that, I kind of went out. But by the grace of God, I'm still here.
If you don't mind me asking, so like, what did you do, like, for the suicide attempt? Like, how?
I took a bunch of pills. Mm-hmm. It was a bunch of prescription pills that were prescribed to me. I think, like, that whole day, like, was just horrible. Because before that, I think it was around, like, Thanksgiving. It was a holiday of some sort. And then I had went out for him to go get pans for something he was making. And then he was just like, this pan's too big, like you're a fucking dumbass, like you can't do shit right, blah, 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 like just tearing me down as a human being and just made me feel so low. And then, so I'm getting dressed, thinking I'm like going, like we're all finna like go over to your mom's, like a little family. And he was like, no, you're a dumb bitch. You can sit here and you can sit by yourself and think about what you just did. And like, he would do this thing to me where he would like turn the TVs off, turn the lights off, take all the remotes, and would just leave me in the house.
Wow, he went to do what?
Whatever he wanted to do.
Wow. So did you have, like, any support, you know, system during this time? Or, like, did nobody know?
Nobody knew. Everybody thought I was living the dream in this nice home. And everything was great, because that's another thing with abusers. They'll take you and they'll isolate you from everything and everyone that you know. And that's what he was doing, like, one by one. Like, he would plant seeds and be like, so-and-so is a horrible person. You shouldn't be around them. Look at her. She's a slut. She doesn't do nothing but go outside and go party all day. Or it'd be, you know, she'd be talking about you and blah, blah, blah. And, like, that post she made, that was about you. Like, he was the most gaslighting, manipulative asshole on the planet. Like he really was. There's no other way to put it.
Okay. That is just, that's crazy.
I think. That,
so at what point did you leave from this situation?
I left multiple times.
Like the time that you left and didn't turn back?
Didn't turn back. That point? Okay, so to understand how I got to that point, you have to understand the stabbing that happened, and I talk about that. So I ended up, so we were in the process, we had just brought a building or whatever, and so we're like, it's the night we move in. Mm-hmm. So he was acting all good up to the night we moved in. And that night he made a fight out of my daughter not being appreciative of him buying a building for her. And blah, 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 because she didn't have her dollhouse. So mind you, she's got to be like 3 or 4 at the mm-hmm. time. So she's like, we go in the house and she's like, where's my dollhouse? Like, he had promised her a new dollhouse with the new house. And so she's a kid. She doesn't know anything better. So I'm just not thinking about it. I'm like, he'll get over his little petty shit in a minute. Let me let him simmer.
Right.
And then so later on in the night, after we've like put the kids' beds together, done all this cute shit together, I had my niece, his other daughter, my daughter, and our son, and then got them all down, and then he proceeded to, like, fuck with me, and I'm like, here we go again. So he just started, like, taunting me, talking shit about my daughter's dad, And I was like, you know what? I've had enough. Like, you want to call him? Like, say these things to him. Like, I don't know what the beef is. And then we're, like, going back and forth. And he ended up sexually assaulting me. And I think that was, like, my final straw. So when I stabbed him, it was more so, like, defense. Like, get off of me. I wasn't trying to kill him or anything like that. But in true narcissistic abusive form, he sat there and, like, made the cuts deeper, squeezed the blood out, smeared it all over the unit. So this would make me look like I'm this monstrous murderer. Like, I just went in and just, like, on some Freddy Krueger type shit. But no, it was literally little baby wounds to, like, get him the fuck off of me. I have enough medical knowledge. I could have killed the man. But I didn't. But so I stabbed him. He ended up leaving. I'm thinking it's another one of his little games. He's going to leave. He begged me to apologize to him. And I was like, I'm not sorry. You just scraped the inside of me out like no other. And I'm left to pick up the pieces. And I'm still here with all these kids. I'm like, I just said, fuck you. And hung up on him and blocked him. So I'm thinking he's just going to go stay at his mom's or stay somewhere else and be back like his crazy ass always is. No. Next knock was a police knock. And so then I'm staring at 10 officers.
10?
Yeah, it was at least like 10. Because the way he called it in, he made it so gruesome. When I looked back and looked over all the records, he made it so gruesome. He went into the hospital so dramatic. Like, she stabbed me. He was trying to get me charged as a felon. It got dropped to a misdemeanor. So I had to go through that whole process. I sat in jail for a weekend.
What about the sexual assault that he had did to you? Like,
they didn't give a fuck. And so at that time, I had an order of protection keeping me from him. He had lured me back in, of course, and got me back under his little wing. And then he ended up getting charged with domestic battery while I was going through this case. And so, that was kind of fucked up to me. Like, nobody took me serious at all. I'm like, this man sexually assaulted me. I'm like, all this. And then I remember going to jail, and the lady was like, do you need medical attention? I'm like, yeah, I'm bleeding from, like, my vagina. Like, yeah, I need help. And then she's just like, I'm going to tell you now, if you say that, you're going to have to go to the hospital, and then you're going to have to come back here, and then that's going to prolong you being here. So if I were you, I would just say I'm okay. So then I went through that whole process saying I was okay.
And
when I wasn't. And I didn't get medical attention until after I got out of jail. And so I got out of jail with absolutely nothing.
And is that when, like, he stopped?
Nope. He's a sick individual. That didn't stop anything for him. So after that, then he lured me back in. And again, because then when I was released from jail, I was on an ankle monitor, and then he had OOP keeping me from him. So that puts me out of my house. That puts me out of my car. He didn't even put his car on the OOP. He put mine. That puts me out of everything that I own. I had $0, 0 cents when I got out of jail. My phone was off. I had nothing. And that's why I think me and my daughter's dad have a close bond. He came and got me from jail, got me clothes, got me somewhere safe. So I thank him for that. But, yeah, that bastard really flipped the script and made a horrible situation and used that situation to, like, plague my life for years.
And how long has that been since now?
I stabbed him in 2021. Mm-hmm. Cook County sucks ass because they mark it as like 2022. It wasn't 22. It was 21 because I remember the day. It was the last day in January. Last day in January. Or was it December? I don't even fucking know. But it rolled over to the next few days was 2022. But so I did that, did my little weekend in jail. I took a plea deal. Mm-hmm. I have never been in any legal trouble before that, so I didn't know what taking a plea was. I had an amazing job in healthcare management at the time, and I'm like, sure, like, no jail time, 6 months conditional discharge, which means I had to stay out of trouble for 6 months. So that was easy. But that cost me like my job. and everything. So I don't know. It was just crazy. That was just like a crazy time.
But so like now, are you away from him?
Oh, 100%. My last interaction with him, as far as relationship or anything, was May 8th of 22. So I remember that because that was Mother's Day. He had lured me back over there. So mind you, I stabbed him. He's such a victim, is what he's portraying to the court. But I was living back in the house. I was back with him. He lured me back for sex, all of that. Like, it's so disgusting and messed up. He still kept the bed that I, like, the stab marks that were in the bed. He kept the sheets, everything. It was like it was frozen in time. Like, he was basking in it. But May 8th, when I went over there, I remember, like, earlier in the morning, he got upset because I didn't want to eat tacos that he brought me back. And I was like, I don't want tacos. So he threw him off the balcony and in the yard, and he's like, you're a bitch. You're going to come back when you get off work, and you're going to clean this up. And I'm like, no, like, it's Mother's Day. I'm going to come back. I'm going to get my son. I'm going to leave. So I went back. I didn't want to stay. He wanted to argue with me again. I didn't feel like it because I had my baby. He did something with the door, and it, like, bumped my son in the face, and he mm-hmm. was trying to, like, plant it like it was me. And then he, like, just fought me belligerently from that. And the amount of bruises that were on my body were, like, unreal. Like, I didn't even, like, look like myself. And mind you, he did all of this in front of my son with my son in my arms. And so I had went, put my son down. I grabbed a few clothes that were in his closet. And then that was it for me. And I remember I called a friend that I value so much. And I told her, I was like, if I go back, stop talking to me. Because at that point, I feel like I valued her friendship more than I even valued myself. So I had to wager something, and right. that was a good enough wager.
So what do you think are the biggest misconceptions about domestic violence?
That somebody, like, chooses this. I think after studying it and understanding it, these abusers, they know how to pick them. They pick empaths. They pick, even in my scenario, he was with a nurse before me that he abused so bad. And then it was me. I was in nursing school when he met me, and I'm an empath, and I do psych work. And the girl now, she's a psych nurse. Like, it's a trend for them. So I don't think that people who get into these situations choose them, but I think that you do have a choice and an obligation to yourself to get away from them.
Right.
And hopefully with your life. And I think, too, like, what an abuser looks like. So a lot of times the abuser is somebody who's well-loved in the community, or somebody who everybody's like, he's amazing, he could never, he would never do that. And that's not the case. So, but it's a profile to him. And it's a profile to what the abuser looks like, and it's a profile to what the victims look like. And from doing it long enough, I see the trends.
Right.
It's always the same.
So, what work do you do again? Mm-hmm. You said you worked with domestic violence. Mm-hmm.
Survivors.
Mm-hmm. And what else was that?
Sex workers and sex trafficked women.
Okay, so in your experience working with, you know, women who are survivors of domestic violence and sex trafficking, what are some common mental health challenges that they may face that you've seen, like, working in the field?
they are very prevalent. Anxiety and depression are, mm-hmm. like, always top tier. Bipolar, mm-hmm. whether it be one or two. The manic episodes are raging. Usually they're at their highest of high with impulsive decisions, impulsive behavior, stuff like that. Or they're totally depressed and they'll try to cut you off and never want to talk to you. Borderline personality disorder, that is another major one. These are the ones that you are, like, almost unable to manage because they go from these intense highs of they're, mm-hmm. like, super angry and they're a whole different person to, like, then they're, like, back normal and, like, they think everything is fine. They have zero accountability. You can tell them it's because you did this, and they'll be like, no, you sabotaged my life and you blah, blah, blah. So working with people with borderline personality disorder, I feel like I statements, more so putting it like on yourself to be able to get through to them. But it's almost like impossible because you never know who you're going to get. So I had the joy of dealing with one of those personalities this week. And that was pretty tough. She still couldn't take accountability. I ended up discharging her because she was still involved in sex work. And that's like an automatic discharge. And that was hard for me. It's like, I don't like to see anybody down bad or homeless or anything like that. So still I went on and I got her a room for the night and like just talked to her like on a one-on-one, like I know like the whole world of it. So I still want you to be better, encourage you to do better for yourself. The next day, after me being so sweet and kind, she still said, and you sabotaged my life. And at that point, I was like, okay, well, that's all I can do for you.
So how do you incorporate your own experiences into your counseling practice with women who've survived trauma?
Just letting them know that I know where they're coming from and then giving them a safe space to speak freely and just loving on them. I always like encourage them and I always tell them like, you are valuable. You are precious. You are better than this. Like life goes on. Like I went on to have an amazing life after this, like, but you have to do the work. And even for me, I had to do the work before I could get to this point with them. So I had to go to trauma therapy and I'm still in trauma therapy.
Right. So how is therapy for you?
Oh, like amazing.
Going to talk to someone about what, you know, you've been through.
Oh, amazing. I love my therapist. She's like amazing. I go every Tuesday. I don't miss a beat. Like I'm at the point where I can do EDMR, which is like the best type of therapy for people who've experienced trauma. It puts you back. It feels like hypnosis is what I like the best way to describe it, but it's not.
Right.
It like takes you back to all your experiences and it helps you to like process them. And
I might need that.
It's so amazing and free. It's not for the weak. Like this is some actual work. Like, cause when you do it, it'll bring up other memories. So like you might have a memory that you thought you blocked off and you never could access and like a smell could trigger it or a tone in someone's voice can trigger it. So then you'll have to relive all that and then process all that. And then it's so crazy how the brain works, but it'll store it as a memory and not so much as a trauma piece that becomes a trigger for you.
Ooh, I might want
to
try that.
It's deep, but it took me 2 years to get to that point. So it took me 2 years.
So it's a process.
It's a process. You can't do EDMR overnight. I know someone who did, and it is not working out well for her at all.
So you have a master's in psychology?
No, I'm getting my master's.
You're working on a master's. Okay, so how does that influence your understanding of trauma and mental health, you know, studying psychology?
Want to know the truth?
Yeah.
I feel like the degree is what you have to get to open the practice.
Right.
But do I feel like, okay, I'll say there's a point to the degree for understanding the diagnosis and being able to diagnose people.
Right.
And all that I am cans and all the like billing and coding BS. But it has to be in you. You cannot degree your way to being in social work or in psychology. You have to be like really understanding of people and really like love people and want to see them do well and want to see them be better. Cause I think my approach is different. Mm-hmm. I think I'm more so, I want to get away from psych meds and more to targeting the trauma in the individual so that they can process it and be able to move on and live a better life. So I don't feel like, I don't know, for what it's needed for, it's needed, but you don't need one. Like, even if I just today wanted to walk outside and start my own facility, I don't need a degree to do that.
Right.
I could open one and then have other people work, but my work is with the women, so I can't leave them hanging.
Right. So how long do you have to be, you know, in school?
It takes you 4 years of undergrad. And then luckily for me, I had did a pre-med program, so that accelerated things. I loved psych back then, so it all transferred over. And then you do 2 to 3 years of graduate school.
A lot of school.
Yeah.
A lot of school.
But, like, thank God I was, like, accelerated at that point. And I chose, I went the accelerated route. So, like, I can take a lot of knowledge in. I think I'm super smart, not to brag on myself. But, yeah. And then when you already work in the field, it makes it easier because then you get this thing called supervision for somebody above you and then you just sign off your hours. So I'm already in it.
Right. Mm-hmm. So how important do you think community support is in the healing process for survivors?
Very important. Who you surround yourself with when you're like that raw and real version, that matters most. Like, I was blessed enough to, I had my godparents, which are like the most amazing God sent thing. Because when I left, I had nothing. So I stayed with them for about 2 years, and I was able to get my head back on straight and get together. And I have a beautiful friend that she coached me through it and, like, just put me onto the power of manifestation super heavy and just positive self-talk and affirmations. And I had met a mentor during that time, and, like, she just put me on because I remember she asked me to write down 5 things I love to do.
Right.
And I had no idea what to do outside of being a mom and being a wife. Like, I had no hobbies. I had no likes. I had no anything. So these people really become, like, your echoing voice until you find your own once you're on your healing journey.
I feel like that's an important piece of it. Before we wrap up, I do want to get into the podcast that you had, the What the Heal podcast. How did that start? How did it come about? And how did it contribute to your healing process?
I think it contributed a lot. It started because I did this thing called, like, Boss Bitch Brunch. And I would just do brunch, and it would be, like, me and Izzy and Brittany on the weekends. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, we should start a podcast.
Right.
Because that's always been my goal. I watch B. Simone a lot, so.
Yeah, her, I be tuned in.
I was so locked in. It was her, and I... She was my greatest source of inspiration to really get behind it. But, yeah, so I was like, yeah, we should just start one. And then it just, like I had real conversations. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I had a good amount of viral moments, like, on that and then going on other podcasts solo by myself. And I'm like, yeah, this is, like, my realm. This is what I'm supposed to be doing because I'm an open book. Because, like, I feel like that's healing in itself. Because if I'm able to be raw and real and honest with my own truths, like, I can inspire somebody else to be that with theirs.
Right, and that's literally what I'm using Talks With Two for.
Mm-hmm.
And as we wrap up, what advice would you give to anyone who is currently in a domestic violence situation regarding their mental health and seeking help, and even to the ones who, you know, haven't spoke up about it just yet? What would you say to those people?
Those beautiful people, because it could be man or woman, you have to value yourself enough first to know that you're worth more than this. And then the fact that whatever your abuser has placed into your mind is not fact. Right. So you are in control of you. Like, once I realized there was no ball and chain, it was an invisible ball and chain.
Right.
And I was able to branch out and really heal myself. Then I saw the difference. But you have to do the work of healing. I think that's the hardest part, is the healing process of it. It hurts. You have to kick and scream. You have to be honest and real with parts of yourself and revisit your childhood to see how you got to this point. But in order to really reap the benefits of life after domestic violence, you have to do that. Otherwise, you're going to meet another abuser. You're going to meet another loser, and you're going to meet another user. So...
Right.
So you have to do the work on yourself and separate yourself. And just know, like, those family and friends that he isolated you from, if they were true, they will be right there.
Right.
Waiting for you.
All right, y'all. So y'all heard that. Where can we find you? You know, any of your platforms that our listeners can reach you at, and as well as, you know, people who may need help.
Mm-hmm. So you can find me on Instagram. Orchid Kiss ENT is like my main one. And so that's ORCHIDKISSENT. Mm-hmm. And then Seductively Said Podcast is the new one I'm promoting and I want everybody to follow. That's where I'll dive deeper into these type of topics. So that's Seductively Said Podcast. And that's on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, all of that. So all my links are in my Instagram bio. Okay. So you'll find me one way or another. You'll find me on Threads. You'll find me somewhere. I'm on somebody, something all the time.
All right. Well, you guys hear that? That'll be a wrap. I really appreciate you coming to tell your story and sit down with Talks With Two. And yeah, make sure y'all stay tuned for the first Chicago Edition episode. We out.
I'm sorry for everything you had to go through. It started as a child. I wish that I was stronger in situations that I had to go through. I'm trying to press it now.